Pasucham daya satyam. Iti pada krite krita. Adharmam seistrayo bhagnai. There is no I in it. Bhagna. Adharmam seistrayo bhagna. Smaya sangha madhaistava. Tapasucham daya satyam. Iti pada krite krita. Adharmam seistrayo bhagna. Smaya sangha madhaistava. Tapaha, austerity, sucham, cleanliness, daya, mercy, satyam, truthfulness, iti, thus, padaha, legs, krite, in the age of satya, kritaha, established, Adharma, irreligiosity, Hamse, by the parts, Trayaha, three combined, Bhagnaha, broken, Smaya, pride, Sangha, too much association with women, Madai, intoxication. Tava, your. Translation. In the age of satya, truthfulness, your four legs were established by the four principles of austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. But it appears that three of your legs are broken to rampant irreligion in the form of pride, lust for women, and intoxication. Purport. I think I'll just read the purport. The deluding energy or material nature can act upon the living beings proportionally in terms of the living beings falling prey to the deluding attraction of Maya. Moths are captivated by the glaring brightness of light, and thus they become a prey to the fire. Similarly, the deluding energy is always captivating to condition souls to become a prey to the fire of delusion. And the Vedic scriptures warn to condition souls not to become a prey to delusion, but to get rid of it. The Vedas warn us not to go to the darkness of ignorance, but to the progressive path of light. The Lord himself also warns that the deluding power of material energy is too powerful to overcome, but one who completely surrenders unto the Lord can easily do so. But to surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord is also not very easy. Such surrender is possible by persons of austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. These four principles of advanced civilization were remarkable features in the age of Satya. In that age, every human being was practically a qualified brahmana of the highest order. And in the social orders of life, they were all paramahansas, or the topmost in the renounced order. By cultural standing, the human beings were not at all subjected to the deluding energy. Such strong men of character were competent enough to get away from the clutches of Maya. But gradually, as the basic principle of Brahminical culture, namely austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness, became curtailed by proportionate development of pride, attachment for women and intoxication, the path of salvation, or the path of transcendental bliss, related far, far away from the human society. With the progression of the age of Kali, people are becoming very proud and attached to women and intoxication. By the influence of the age of Kali, even a pauper is proud of his penny. The women are always dressed in overly attractive fashion to victimize the minds of men, and the man is addicted to drinking wine, smoking, drinking tea, and chewing tobacco, etc. All these habits, or so-called advancement of civilization, are the root cause of all irreligiosities, and therefore it is not possible to check corruption, bribery, and nepotism. Men cannot check all these evils simply by statutory acts and police vigilance, but he can cure the disease of the mind by the proper medicine, namely advocating the principles of Brahminical culture, or the principles of austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. Modern civilization and economic development are creating a new situation of poverty and scarcity, with the result of blackmailing the consumers' commodities. If the leaders and the rich men of society spend 50% of their accumulated wealth mercifully for the misled mass of people and educate them in God consciousness or in the knowledge of the Bhagavatam, certainly the age of Kali will be defeated in its attempt to entrap the conditioned souls. We must always remember that false pride, or too high an estimation of one's own values of life, undue attachment to women or association with them, and intoxication will divert human civilization from the path of peace. However much the people clamor for peace in the world, the preaching of the Bhagavatam principles will automatically render all men practice to austerity, clean both inside and outside, merciful to the suffering, and truthful in daily behavior. That is the way of correcting the flaws of human society, which are very prominently exhibited at the present moment. Om Jnanati Maranda Sirkinandana Sadakya Saksura Militam Yanatas Mai Shiguru Venamaha. In covering so much territory of the Bhagavatam in one lecture, one is tempted to go very broad and then just do an overview, which means you touch a few points and then and you try to give the storyline. Yesterday, we also dealt with so many verses and basically got most of the storyline. Kali in royal dress, beating the bull Dharma, beating the cow. Kali then... being checked by Maharaj Pariksit, and subsequently a discussion between Dharma and Maharaj Pariksit. And in that discussion, basically, Maharaj Pariksit was checking who really did this, who was really responsible for the condition that Dharma was in, standing on one leg. And then Dharma begins to explain. It is hard to say because Dharma is bewildered by the presentations of various philosophers. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary, did what he often does in his commentaries, is like had a conversation. So he added a whole conversation between Dharma and Maharaj Pariksit. And basically Dharma is saying, no, it's hard to say who is the cause of this because of all the various philosophies. Then Maharaj Pariksit replies and says, yes, but you are knowledgeable of the scriptures, so you should be able to figure out. He says, no, because there are many contradictions in all the various presentations in the scriptures, and very confusing. But Dharma is sort of hinting to Maharaj Pariksit where the truth lies and leaves it up to him to ultimately decide. Dharma does mention that Kali indeed is the perpetrator, right, who picked up the stick and so on, and who did the beating. So there's no doubt about that, but then he questions his responsibility in terms of maybe it is karma, then he takes various views. The Karma Mimamsa view, it's karma. He takes the impersonalist view, and which ultimately doesn't recognize any reality other than Atma. Therefore, Atma has to be the cause. There is no other cause, right? So, in this way, he goes over various causes and leaves it up to Maharaj Pariksit. Maharaj Pariksit is not relieving Kali from his responsibility and is ready to take action. And that is where we are today. Then we discussed yesterday also a little bit about how the story in one sense is like a true physical situation of the bull and the cow and Maharaj Pariksit and Kali and so on. And then there's another explanation of the story where the four legs of the bull Dharma are representing these qualities which are slowly breaking down with the passing of the yugas. And here in this verse we are discussing the four yugas. We're discussing Satya Yuga, and we're discussing how these qualities, the four legs of Dharma, were standing like pillars in that particular age, and how everyone was highly qualified. Now, it has progressed to the age of Kali, and gradually we see the age of Kali is known as the age of quarrel. In the Bhagavatam, there are descriptions where Yudhisthira begins to perceive signs in people that make him suspect the age of Kali has begun. He is seeing that sons are not obedient to their father, husbands and wives are constantly fighting, and he's seeing such kind of symptoms and concludes that the age of Kali must have begun. Right? And they are just on that junction of the Dwapara and Kali Yuga. So yes, it is the age of quarrel. Looking at this purport that we just read, one thing that struck me was when Srila Prabhupada gives a list of the corruption of qualities in the age of Kali, intoxication, illicit sex, and all these kind of things, that he says that it is not possible. I'm just looking where it is. Where was it? Don't see it. But I'll do it from memory. The point was made that not by policing or by some external control can these evils be ultimately rooted out. Oh, here it is. Man cannot check all these evils simply by statutory acts and police vigilance, but he can cure the disease of the mind by the proper medicine, namely advocating the principles of Brahminical culture or the principles of austerity, cleanliness, mercifulness, and truthfulness. So that is the point. Unless there is a change of heart, it will not be possible to check the age of Kali by no means of legislation or control. So here Maharaj Pariksit's situation of trying to punish Kali was a great difficulty. In the end, a change of to root out the influence of Kali, a change of mentality will be required. Another interesting point in the whole narration, which I kind of brought up yesterday, is the fact that Kali was not completely defeated by Maharaj Pariksit. If we read the story nicely, then we'll see that Maharaj Pariksit is ready to kill Kali. But Kali at that point surrenders to the king. He doesn't, although he's dressed like a Kshatriya, he's not acting like one. He becomes submissive, he bows down, and he takes shelter. So then Maharaj Pariksit, who is the embodiment of Dharma, is not going to kill him. So he said, all right, don't worry about your life. But then the next issue that arises is that he is also not going to give Kali any space for his nefarious activities at all. Not at all. So there is a contradiction arising in the situation. Kali is allowed to live, but he gets no place to act. Then he is bringing out that point. Where will I go? Where will I exist? So finally, Maharaj Pariksit said, okay, in those places where these four irreligious activities, illicit sex, gambling, intoxication, meat eating are going on, you can stay there. There were no such places. There were no such places. So he still didn't have a place to stay. And then he was granted that he could stay there where gold was stored, because gold will bring out these kind of qualities. But meanwhile, Kali was completely kept in check. Yeah? It was not that in this way Maharaj Pariksit was defeated by Kali. What really happened was, it is said that then Kali was brought under control, and the kingdom flourished under Maharaj Pariksit. So Kali's influence didn't spread any further. But we can see that it continued, as we can see. And gradually, Kali has re-emerged after Maharaj Pariksit's rule. So, of course, there is a divine hand in the whole narration. It is clear that it is destiny that Kali takes over, and therefore even Maharaj Pariksit, who was qualified and who by his qualification was able to temporarily ward off and check the influence of Kali, was destined to spread by the will of the Lord. Because ultimately, the Lord provides for the living being. And as the living beings develop further degradation, the Lord provides facility for it. Sometimes I compare the degradation of the four yugas to an educational program, and where you say that in the Satya Yuga you have very high class education and you have very high entrance levels. So in other words, in the Satya Yuga, the human birth is not given to just any living being. Human position is given to those who are highly qualified. In the Treta Yuga, the human position is given to those who are less qualified. In the Dwapara Yuga, still less qualified. In the Kali Yuga, to those who have an animalistic mentality, they're still getting the human form of life. So the threshold of the human form of life is lowered in the age of Kali. And in this, taking life as having an educational purpose, life in the material world, we can see that the age of Kali is like a school for those with learners' difficulties. That's basically the situation. And therefore, this age of Kali is like that. It is a difficult. A lot is accommodated. All these contaminations are accommodated, allowed for. All right, surrender is so difficult. All right. But then we see that the lessons are also in relation to the fallen condition of the residents of the age of Kali. The lessons are harsh. So the entire environment becomes also harsh. Physical conditions become harsh. We get violent purification in this particular age, not of the same subtle nature as in other yugas. But short and intense, and we're trying to desperately enjoy, but enjoyment is decreasing day by day, and actually transforms more and more into suffering, and we create our own suffering. Now we are deviously throwing toxics in the ocean for the next generations to deal with, not realizing that we ourselves are going to be the next generations, right? That we'll have to return and deal with the mess that we create ourselves. It's very interesting how these things are arranged. Anyway, so, but we can see that this age of Kali then is a facility where those who are not very qualified are also getting a chance. Of course, of all the ages of Kali, this one is particularly interesting. That has to be noted, that this one is the one where Lord Chaitanya appeared, is not like an ordinary Kali Yuga. Now, everything, the mercy is so great, so wonderful, that even although we are not so qualified, the mercy is so extraordinary in quantity and in quality that it doesn't even matter so much. Even with lack of qualification, one can still be washed away by this tidal wave of love of God, which was unleashed by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and then Prabhupada carried it, like Maharaj Bhagirathi carried the Ganga further. In that way, Prabhupada carried the mercy of Lord Chaitanya further than Lord Chaitanya gave it himself. Um, Yeah, so in this lecture today, I find that a Bhakti Vaibhava class, to do it properly, that it requires for 1 hour of lecturing at least 4 to 5 hours preparation. Because you have to read all the verses, you have to analyze everything, you have to underline sections, you have to look at the commentaries, then you look at summaries of those who already have studies. And if you do all that for a section like this, 5 hours, easily. I didn't have 5 hours for the Bhagavatam yesterday, unfortunately. And therefore, I feel if I'm attempting to do something like that, it's not going to be real. Yeah, it's like I'm just going to act as if I'm doing a nice overview, but meanwhile I'm just bluffing, yeah, to be honest, yeah, because I don't remember right now what is in all those verses that I'm supposed to speak about. And I can read fast, and I can flick pages and pick out some sentences and sort of try and go to a a point, and it will have some value because I'll repeat the Bhagavatam, but still, I wouldn't be satisfied myself with what I would be doing. Yeah. So I'm not going to do it. I'm on strike. That should be okay. Everyone strikes. Even Lufthansa striked as I was on the way to here. So if they can strike, I can strike. So what I'll do is I'll just speak from inspiration. Yeah, that's all I can do. You know, let it come on its own. I'm thinking that that particularly the age of Kali, which became so established, which became so deeply rooted, not only outside of us, but particularly within us. There is a long story in the Mahabharata which I'm going to try and just take the conclusion of. It is the story of King Nala and Damayanti. And basically, in that story, it is in Dwapara Yuga when it takes place. And somehow or other, Nala upsets the demigods, although he was not guilty of it. And Kali, the lowest of the celestials, goes to Indra and asks for permission to punish Nala. And he does so, he gets that grant, and then what he does, he possesses Nala at that point. King Nala becomes possessed by Kali. And Kali and Nala takes all kinds of decisions in his life, right, which are completely logical, make good sense according to the circumstances, but in fact, he's all along influenced and possessed by Kali. And I'll just focus on that point for a moment because it's very interesting how Kali has that possessive element and how in this age it is sometimes said Kalo Nastadrisam Esa, that by Bhagavatam the influence of Kali will be destroyed. And that is interesting, because the influence of Kali is actually that the residents of the age of Kali are possessed. Mm? They're possessed by Kali. So we're all possessed, actually. So we are true residents of Kali, and there's no way that we are independently taking decisions or that we are just under temptation of Kali. It goes much further. We are possessed and then under temptation of Kali. That is the situation. So we can see our fundamental weakness is just very, very great in this age. And we are, it's like, you know, a handicapped person, right, who can not properly move his arms or leg, who has to ride a horse, right, that is like of a very wild and uncontrolled nature. I mean, what chance do you have? It's not a fair chance, you know. It's like it's an invalid, you know. I mean, how is it possible? Something like that. So we start with a handicap. That is the point. And therefore, we see also, we are kind of all walking on crutches, right? And we need as many crutches as we can have in spiritual life. Therefore, although we have a fully transcendental process, the Sankirtan movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and although we can chant the holy name, which in itself is complete, that still is not adequate. Although the Yuga Dharma is the chanting of the holy name, and Kirtaniya Sadahari should do the job, we just can't do it. And therefore we need an enormous support structure around it. So we have deity worships, then we have the two tracks, Pancharatriki and Bhagavad Vidhi. Bhagavad Vidhi including hearing, chanting, and remembering. And then the Pancharatriki, including deity worship, including initiations, including a Brahminical status, including cultivation of qualities of the mode of goodness. I was looking at the yoga ladder in the Bhagavad Gita, and you know, like taking it in a broader way. At least you see karma yoga, jnana yoga, bhakti yoga type of progression, and then it looks like okay, that shows like different people who are having evolved in different ways and who are like coming closer to the absolute truth and karma yoga, all right, they are engaged very much with the material energy. It can become purified by connecting with Krishna. Jnana yoga very much frustrated in the material world, looking, philosophizing, asking the question, why all this suffering, what is the purpose of life, and then finally bhakti yoga, devotional service. And but it struck me that these levels are also for us different retreat levels. When we fail to fully absorb in bhakti, when we just fail to fully absorb Krishna out of love, all right, then we have philosophy. And we can remember what is the appropriate religious activity and why. Why? Philosophy doesn't just tell us what our religious duty is, but it gives us also the reasons why. So, all right, then, yeah, I guess I have to follow this. So on the strength of knowledge, then, will we act. And even when knowledge fails, when we cannot just, I know I should do this, but I just can't do it out of habit. Right? I'm habituated to a certain type of activity. All right, engage your activities and bend them, basically. Bend them into towards Krishna. So like this, we see different safety nets, you can say. Bhakti, then a level down, and then another level down. So that is the situation that's required for handicapped personalities like us. That is basically what is needed. All these safety nets. So who is the one who is a effulgent example of pure devotion? An interesting play or book is the Chaitanya Chandradoya Natak. It is really counted as a book, but okay, it is a play. And this Chaitanya Chandradoya Natak gives an extensive description of Kali. And I'll just take a few things. It describes how jnana and vairagya, knowledge and renunciation, have become really depleted by the age of Kali. It is as if they have been fasting for a very long time and malnourished. They are just very weak and they look emaciated, and they are not in full strength, knowledge and renunciation. And they are desperately looking for new inspiration. And then they see a sadhu in effulgent clothing, right? Effulgent. But when they get closer, they actually see he's not a sadhu at all. He's actually a demon who is with great pride trying to perform public austerities for the sake of self-aggrandizement. So in this way, Kavi Karnapur, the writer of Chaitanya Chandradoya Natak, goes on and just describes that, like, he says, brahmacharis in this age are basically dysfunctional men who couldn't get it together to get married. That's basically what he's saying. He's just lashing out, you know, like left and right without any... That was like a very strong, cutting analysis. So there are many such kind of observations, right? There is a Dutch writer named Erasmus who wrote a book called The Praise of Folly, right? A very famous book. And he just, in the book, he just establishes how people are devotees of foolishness. And it's brilliant. It's brilliant. And he just gets into everyone. He gets into the scholars. He gets into mothers. No one escapes. No one escapes. Everyone's part of it. Then he gets into the monks, right, who are wearing nice belts with polished hasps on them and special sandals, probably Birkenstocks or something like that. Basically, cutting a profile. Oh, not against Birkenstocks, Rita. But pointing out that spirituality has become external, that it's all about status, and that basically the true substance is hard to find. Yeah, so these are the kind of influences we see from the age of Kali, and we can look at that. And certainly, a solution given here of restoring Brahminical culture is required. But restoring Brahminical culture will never conquer Kali. If it is not Sansidhir Haritosanam, then the whole Varna Ashram is not going to be adequate. Therefore, Varna Ashram can never be more than a support structure. One of my lectures I once gave, once I gave a lecture where I compared Varna Ashram to crutches. Right? And the next morning I got 300 letters, right, in a mailbox of protest. And therefore, over the years, I take great pleasure in repeating it again and again. So, therefore, I have to say it again today. Varna Ashram. I got even mail from Timisoara. I've never been there, but I got mail from Timisoara. So, for my fan club in Timisoara, I'd like to say that Varna Ashram is really a support system, and therefore the word crutch is appropriate. Yeah. It is a support system, and not more than that. But very needed, because handicapped people can't do without. They can't do without. So we need it like anything, yes, because we're so handicapped. Yes. For Haridas Thakur, it wasn't so relevant. It really wasn't. He was absorbed in chanting the holy name and really wasn't at all relying on such external things. But for us, because there is so little internal substance, we need a whole external arrangement of spiritual life, a regular program, a support, a community centered around deity worship with handbooks of how to do it so that we don't become offensive and so on, and negligent and careless and endless rules and regulations governing our life. Right? There's no question. And then we like to speak about Raghunuga Bhakti, which in reality is something very nice and theoretical, that we can read about. And sometimes for a moment, we do have some spontaneous devotional feelings, and then we conveniently forget all the spontaneous materialistic feelings that we have. The spontaneous envy that keeps on emerging, or the spontaneous lust, greed, and so on, or a little dose of madness, and all these other wonderful things. Or just our sleepiness, right, which some give pound to a pool on his name. He doesn't sleep behind the wheel. As you can see, I'm not staying so close to the text this morning, but I'm getting something off my chest. And that is very healthy. In the end, I think if you really take what I said and put it in the context of these verses, then I think it's fine. You know, I have become involved in these kind of Shastric educations in our movement, and every year in Mayapur, I have been teaching Bhakti Shastri and Bhakti Vaibhav courses. And you know, sometimes I had to do 2.5 chapters of Bhagavatam in 1 week. Eh? And I go, and at first I sincerely tried, you know. Then I realized this is insane. This is absolutely insane. It's too much, you know, I can't process it. I can't digest it, if I can even read it, right? And I decided that I wasn't going to do that anymore. What I did then is, being a manager, I thought, you know, I do all the work, and then I got to work like anything, and then I got to come, and then I got to do a brilliant presentation, right? And so, interesting with all kinds of little deep tidbits. I thought, forget it. So what I did, I farmed it out to the class, and I said, everybody take 10 verses or whatever, take a section, And I gave them all sections, said, and this is your homework, and you bring back questions on essential points tomorrow. That was great in that way. They did the work, and all I had to do was comment. I liked that much better. It reminds me of book distribution. I remember we had a book distribution technique where first we used to stand out in the rain here in the Benelux, right? And we used to knock on windows of cars and then, you know, try and sell the book. Then someone developed a technique, changed the technique, and when it rained, we stayed in the car and we wound down our window and we called people over as if we were lost. And it worked very well. And we stayed dry and they got wet. So I think anyone who teaches Bhaktivaibhava, I can recommend that style. Today I couldn't do that either, because I guess so nobody did his homework. You didn't do it, neither did I. Well, I think then that our discussion of 50 verses in 2 days is not really of a very high standard, I'm sorry to say. Therefore, I just take the spirit of this narration and place it, the spirit of Kali Yuga and our individual weakness within, and I place this amount of text in the context of our movement. Yeah, that's basically what I've done. Yeah, say our movement, looking at this section of the Bhagavatam through the perspective of where we are in this movement, where we have the mercy of Prabhupada, where we have the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, where basically we are straggling along in spiritual life, walking on crutches, sort of following in the footsteps, zigzagging a little bit, of great, wonderful acharyas. And somehow or other, we're still on the path. Don't ask me how. But, and it goes like that. And then, you know, after, as time goes by, then suddenly people begin to glorify you. And for all the amazing things you've done, and think, well, you know, it's like in my case, if I look at what the service I've done, then I will confess that I did it simply because I didn't want to face the embarrassment of of publicly looking like a fool when I wasn't surrendering to a particular service. But most of the time, I really didn't want to do it. Most of the service that I was asked to do, I wanted to say no. I was thinking, how am I going to get out of this? I sometimes successfully got out of it. And if I really couldn't get out of it anymore, then I just did it to avoid embarrassment, and then got glorified for something like that. So that's the situation in the age of Kali, not just for me, but for many others. And therefore we see that the mercy element is very, very great in the age of Kali. The chanting of Hare Krishna is the price to pay. It is the price to pay. Without chanting Hare Krishna, we just cannot expect that we will be successful. So if that's the one thing you cannot do, well, then that's just the one thing that's going to keep you in the material world. Yeah? That's it. Say, like, well, I'm living with the devotees, I'm doing everything, I'm here, I'm doing service, I'm taking prasadam, I'm, you know, following the principles as good as I can, and it's all very nice, but chanting is just the one thing I can't do. Well, then that's just the one thing that's going to keep us in the material world, unless we become a special Kripa Siddha case, you know. But that's the PhD, the honorary PhD without studying, right? A degree that is sometimes offered without studying. It doesn't happen very often. It does happen, but no. If you want to bank on that, good luck. So somehow or other, I guess, we have to move our jaws, right, and chant the holy name, no matter how difficult it is. I know. I can't say that I every day chant 16 rounds in ecstasy. Right? Many days I chant 16 rounds trying to be faithful. Just trying to be faithful. And some days it's very nice, but and some days it's outright a struggle. Even now, after all this time. But it's a good struggle. It's a great struggle. It's the best struggle. So, you know, we have to struggle anyway. And if you don't want to struggle, you took birth in the wrong age. Sorry. Everyone has to struggle in this age. So we have to struggle. You can't escape it. Whatever direction we run, you're going to struggle. Yeah. Doesn't matter. Wherever we are, we're going to struggle. So we may as well struggle with chanting the holy name, because struggling is our constitutional position in this age of Kali. Okay, thank you so much. I think that you're supposed to end on a high note, so stop with that. Any question or comment? Not too many all at once, you know. I mean, I got a terrible memory. Jeez, I already forgot half. I'll start, and you start, and as I'm getting lost, I'll ask you. You lead me along the way. Gosh. Okay. Maharaj Pariksit was a devotee. So a devotee is, to some degree, aware that we are instruments of Krishna. Krishna is working through us. That's what Krishna does. So Maharaj Pariksit, taking responsibility, saw himself as the representative of Krishna. He was aware to some extent he was an instrument of Krishna. But even the greatest devotee, even the topmost pure devotee who consciously lives in that relationship with Krishna, is always thinking of himself as representing Krishna's interest, even such a devotee cannot see how much Krishna is using him as an interest, because Krishna is inconceivable. So we cannot see how Krishna, to a full extent, how Krishna is using us as an instrument. So Maharaj Pariksit was not to the full extent overseeing how Krishna was using him as an instrument. And I think if Maharaj Pariksit would have known that Kali, after the demise of Maharaj Pariksit, that Kali anyway would have taken over, he might not have spared him. He might not. But Dharma is very tricky, because Dharma has principles of mercy built in. Right? So, therefore, on the one, so he had to weigh these things, right? The element of mercy, of being compassionate, and being strict and punishing a wrongdoer. Kali deserved to be punished because he had committed a crime. He deserved to be killed. But yeah, okay, he appealed to mercy. So being a devotee and following Dharma. So those were two factors feeding the mercy in Maharaj Pariksit his devotee nature, and Dharma itself, which has an element of mercy built in. So mercy got the better of him. So this is the problem. There's a problem with Dharma sometimes, you see. Yeah, like, it's very interesting in the European history, you see that the wars that were fought between various nations were fought on Kshatriya principles, because even when guns were already there, there were wars between the Prussians and the Prussians and the French, and they had guns that could shoot only one bullet. So first of all, they would stand in formation and then invite the opposing party to have the first shot. So then it was a thing, after you, after you, after you. And then finally, okay, when one party was having the first shot, then whoever was standing in the other army, they had a shot. And in the end, whichever army had most standing, that one had won. And then Napoleon came in, and what he did, he invented the bayonet, put that on the gun. They, instead of having these kind of Kshatriya codes, they shot the first shot, and then they ran into the army of the opposing army with the bayonet and killed them all before they could reload their guns. So that was his technique, and it changed warfare. So it was interesting how the adharmic way apparently was successful. In the same way, Nadia, we had the Sena kings, and they were very powerful in ruling Bengal. And Nadia was the capital, and they had a huge army, and they were very, very powerful. And there was a relatively small Muslim commando team that disguised themselves as horse salesmen. And instead of going for a fair fight, they penetrated into the palace and captured it, and captured the king and so on. So typical treacherous guerrilla tactics. And in that way, that was the end of the Sena dynasty, and that was the beginning of Islam rule in Bengal. So again, adharma defeated dharma. Dharma could not always deal with adharma. See, that's very interesting how adharma, with its treacherous means, found ways where these dharmic kings, yes, they were conditioned to Dharma, so they acted to Dharma and expected their opponents to act according to Dharma, and then he wasn't. So that was exactly what Kali did. He didn't act according to Dharma. So that definitely was bewildering. Maharaj Pariksit hadn't dealt with that. That was something astounding to him. And that comes out in the narrative. So that element is there. Don't know what I missed from your question. Question was too big.
I was asking for the sake of personal application, because we have, besides ourselves, we have to deal with the ones who are possessed by Kali. Mm-hmm. It's difficult to follow the compassionate example of Maharaj Pariksit.
Definitely.
It's like when I look at myself, I'm definitely much more prone to judge others, especially non devotees, but they are so much possessed by Kali. So I was wondering
Yeah, well, therefore we don't kill, right? And although we are restoring Varnashram, right, to a degree, we're not going as far as having a whole Kshatriya division with swords who are going around killing the miscreants. We kill the demoniac spirit. That is our aim. So we see that our application of Varnashram is running parallel to the process of bhakti, of Sankirtan, and that when it comes to killing the demons, the Sankirtan process takes over, and we try to kill their demoniac mentality following the example of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with Jagai and Madai, Nityananda, who stopped them from doing it. Because if we were fully applying if we were trying to apply Varna Ashram to the best of our understanding, which is not that good. Nobody understands Varna Ashram. That's why when you start talking about Varna Ashram, we talk forever. It's like get the biggest discussions. Because in its intricacies, we cannot fully capture the culture. The sanskaras are lost. There's only 6% of the Vedic literature available. Even in India, the culture is not fully available. So we are sort of acting according to Kshatriya principles, according to our Kali Yuga perception of what it is. So it's dangerous. And we start to take up the sword. So better we kill the demoniac mentalities with the holy name. Even on the domestic front, I have seen that sometimes at the time of a fight, many slokas are quoted in domestic disagreements. Suddenly, all this shastra comes out, and the shastra says this, the shastra says that. Never heard as many quotes as in a fight. Also experienced in my own previous ashram. We were at our best quoting Shastra at these moments. But that's better than violence. So if you're inclined towards domestic violence, then you can beat your spouse with the Bhagavatam. Verses from the Bhagavatam, not with the book itself. Anyone else, or should I end? Please. Pride. Yeah.
That seems to correspond to one of the rules and regulations in the context of
the... Okay. Yeah, okay. I just have to switch on my brain. Wake up. Well, let's go over them. We have cleanliness, we have compassion, we have truthfulness, and austerity. I think that pride has a detrimental effect on all of them. Because we will not be inclined to take shelter when there's pride. The first principle of pride is that we begin to rely on ourselves rather than on looking for shelter. Whereas all these principles are a particular path of shelter. I think that pride, especially, is becoming the final problem in the truth. We see the narration of Sringi cursing Maharaj Pariksit, and we see how he's a small Brahminical boy who is trained already to an extent and has got power by that training, but who lacks the actual Brahminical discrimination due to pride. And then Sringi becomes the emblem of the fall down of Brahminical culture and that basically of a society based on knowledge of scripture. And then Kali can enter. And then Maharaj Pariksit, the last obstacle to Kali, is removed by Sringi. So I think there the element of that pride is really coming to I think it's coming to a peak. So, and since the essence of since the brahmanas are particularly dedicated to the truth, first of all, therefore it is the truth that is the most affected by pride. But I think that all three legs were suffering a lot from pride. And for all of us, it's like cleanliness, for example. You know, it's just one of those things. There are endless rules, right? You're not supposed to, with the left hand, touch something while you're eating, you know what I mean? Like, it's a girl, like, you know, give us a break, you know, like, I mean, yeah. But gradually, these things go down. So, humility will help us also there to take shelter of cleanliness. And then that will give us strength in, because if we surrendering in small things, surrendering on many small fronts will give us strength to surrender in bigger situations, in bigger issues. So this negligence in the smaller things is actually quite detrimental also. No. Okay. Time's up. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.